and welcome to Media Mavens. This is episode 65. I'm Pam, and with me today is returning guest Sarah.
Hello.
Hey, Sarah. How you doing?
I'm good. It was, 10 o'clock's really early for me on a Saturday, so I'm awake and caffeinated, ready to go.
Thank you for joining me. I've been missing podcasting.
Oh.
So we are going to talk about a number of things, sort of what we've been up to. And then our main topic for today is going to be YouTube. Just sort of commentary and observations, both as viewers and as creator on my side, at least. There's been lots of YouTube drama lately, so.
Well, spicy drama.
We will get into that in the second part. But to start out, what have you been up to lately?
So it's funny, I was trying to think of the things we were going to talk about in the first bit of the show, and I was like, it's been so long since I've talked to you that I could probably talk about, 30 movies I've seen, but I just narrowed it down to the last few few weeks of my life. I've been, I tried to make an effort as part of my New Year's resolution was to watch more movies, which I know seems like crazy since I watch a lot of movies, but I've been watching some good ones. And the one I watched most recently that I really enjoyed was called The Little Stranger, which is sort of like a quiet psychological thriller that I really highly recommend if you enjoy the deterioration of sort of rich colonial English housing as a metaphor for the deterioration of your soul. It's really good. I'm trying to remember the actor's name. Let me see. Domhnall Gleeson, who I know is like famous, but I couldn't put my finger on where I knew him from. But he's in, he plays Bill Weasley in the Harry Potter movies.
So, oh, okay. But he's in Ex Machina.
I've never seen that. And everyone,
really?
I know, it's shocking. Yeah, it's on my list. Yeah, so he's really, really good in it. Oh, he plays General Hux too.
Oh, yeah.
So he's super quiet, and it's just like, how much sad shit can happen to some people, and also maybe a ghost. So, highly recommend that one.
Interesting. It's also got Ruth Wilson.
Yes, she's incredible in it. Oh, she's so good.
And seeing her in this reminds me of that other one, the I Am the Pretty Thing.
I loved that movie. Love it. It's sort of similar, but almost even more subtle.
Even more subtle, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. So I haven't been watching too many movies lately. I mostly have been watching shows. So something that I know you just watched too was the new Netflix show Dead to Me with Christina Applegate and
the woman I know from every like hospital show for the last 20 years. Linda Cardinelli. Yeah.
Yeah. That's her. Which I really liked. I think you said it when you said it looked like a low rate, pretty, no, Little Big Lies.
Yeah.
And it was like, kind of.
Yeah.
But still good.
No, it was totally good. And I guess what I meant by low rent, Big Little Lies was like small scale. I need to watch my language. Because
I know.
I didn't mean it negatively. I just mean like, it's like that, but with two people instead of four or whatever. But yeah, I loved it. I loved it.
Me too. It's about a woman whose husband gets killed in a hit-and-run car accident, and she sort of goes to this grief group and meets another woman whose husband has died. And it's just sort of their friendship and the sort of secrets between them. And I really, really liked it. Like, I have to say, at the end of the first episode, and this doesn't happen to me, but like the reveal at the end of the first episode, like I gasped out loud.
Ooh, you're like the hardest person to shock on the planet.
I know.
That's so exciting.
I was very excited when that happened.
That's awesome. Oh,
totally unexpected.
Yeah.
But it was just nice to see a friendship between two women as the...
Even though they talked about men a lot, it was amazing to me to see a show where 90% of the stuff that happens on screen is normal conversation between two women over 40. I was like, holy shit, this rules. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just was so impressed.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely recommend it to anyone out there. It's I don't know. It's like comedy and drama, like a dark comedy. Mm-hmm. Like they have a lot of, you know, sort of comedy to cope with terrible things that have happened to them, which I always like. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's dark comedy in the way that they joke about really terrible shit, like, for sure. Mm-hmm. But I also found it had, because of the way the story plays out, so much tension. Like, I was tense watching it the whole mm-hmm. time. Because I was like, when is this thing going to happen? When is this thing going to happen? Through 10 episodes. And it was just like, oh, it made for such a good atmosphere. So good. Mm-hmm. I guess if I had, my only complaint would be, of course, you know, watching two wealthy white women struggle is like, I'm kind of over that. But again, just their ages, and they didn't, you know, you could like see that they looked human, which this bar is so low, but I was very happy. I was very happy about that.
I was really happy. Yeah, but I did definitely hit on the rich white women. Like, especially, I don't know, I feel like that's the case with almost any show, though. Like, I feel like even when I had on Nico to talk about Sex and the City last time, I think, like, that's sort of what it's going to be. Like, if you're going to have a show about this kind of stuff, like, they're going to be rich. Like, they just can't seem to, like, even fathom piling on, like, any kind of wealth disparities or, like, lack of wealth on top of.
That's very true. And I guess, I guess my only problem with that is that it makes it seem like the only people who have intrigue in their lives are people who have time to have intrigue. But I feel like everybody has some level of intrigue in their lives. And I wish TV would show that more. Although those houses were fucking beautiful. Holy shit.
Yeah.
They were very nice to see. But yeah, that's so that was my only a minor complaint in this case.
Yeah.
And I guess for some of the parts, they have to be like that because it gives the writers, probably feel better about depicting rich people as superficial or, you know, gossipy, which I suppose that's probably more realistic. Maybe. I don't know. I think everybody gossips.
I think so. Gossip is free.
That's true. It is free. Speaking of TV shows, are you still watching Riverdale?
I am.
Okay, good. I cannot believe I'm still watching this show.
I can't believe it either. Like, honestly, the last musical episode, I was like, I can't handle this anymore. But then I just kept watching it.
That musical episode was so bad. Oh my God.
It was so bad. And I love musicals. I love bad musicals, like musical Xena, musical Buffy. I am here for it. But that was just real bad.
And it was, I think for me, it's not campy enough. Like, if the show wants to be a campy noir, like, just lean in, bro. Go for it. Instead, it's like too serious. It takes itself on face value. It's just too much. It's so much.
I've actually been watching a couple YouTube videos about how Riverdale is garbage and like reading about how, you know, the first season was relatively coherent. And then just since then, it's like these 17-year-olds own speakeasies and they're tracking down serial killers.
Yep. So someone described it to me as it's True Detective starring teens, which just does not work, like, at all. But I love it. I can't stop watching. It's not good.
I know. I'm trying to even think of what it is that keeps me watching it. Because I don't know if it's, like, all the shirtless muscular boys or, like...
Yeah, yes, me too. Because what I really liked is... I mean, I hate to admit this, but I love Cole Sprouse. Like, I think he's a great actor. I apparently have some insane crush on him. And I really liked watching it for the Will They Won't They with Betty. But now everyone's coupled off and, you know, that's the end of that. Like the inter-teen drama is what I really like versus, anything else really. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what, I guess holding out hope for more of that keeps me coming back.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like they've sort of dropped any kind of want for characterization or relationship building, and they're just like, okay, well, we'll stick these two back together when it's convenient, and then she'll forget her best friend, and then he'll come back because he wants to join the cult. But then, you know, he's probably not going to be much of a character for the next little while. Like, it's
really funny that people maybe haven't watched the show since the first season, and you just dropped the word cult, and so it's like people are going to be like, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry, the what now?"
Yeah.
We have to be like, yep, there's a cult.
Yeah, so this season not only has a cult, but also a D&D, an evil D&D game.
Because that makes so much sense.
Although I did really like when they did the 80s episode, and they had them all playing their parents.
Oh yeah, that was great. That was great. I liked that a lot.
I really liked that. And I thought that, I don't remember Archie's real name, but he did an amazing KJ Luke Appa. Perry. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was what was so great about it, is like seeing all those actors who were famous in the 80s and then like their children counterparts. I just was like, this is so perfect. Mm-hmm. It was so cute.
That was the one episode that actually made me happy to watch. But a little break. I mean, it was still nonsense, but it was,
yeah,
it's sort of more intentional, kind of ridiculous nonsense.
That's so funny. I really miss Luke Perry. I was just gonna say, I'm so sad that he passed away. It's not, I don't know. I really liked him on that show. I realize now maybe he was the glue holding everything together, because now he's not on it. And it was weird though, because it also made me realize, I forgot that TV shows film almost in real time. It's only like a month or two off, and so when they were like, this is gonna be his last episode, it wasn't that long ago that he passed away, and they were still filming this season. So it's wild to me how the like turnaround with television shows makes me very impressed with TV actors.
Yeah, that is interesting. I've been rewatching Xena, and as I've been doing it, listening to Xena the Warrior podcast, which is like a recap and analysis show. And in season two, Lucy Lawless broke her pelvis rehearsing a stunt on horseback for like the Tonight Show or something.
Oh my God.
It wasn't even for the actual show. And so it was interesting how they worked around that to give her the time off that she needed in the middle of filming.
Wow.
They did body swap episodes, so like it was Xena and Kalisto's body, and like it was,
that's so funny.
Yeah. What else for you?
So I know everyone's been talking about this, and so I thought I would talk about it here. I watched a couple days ago the new Zac Efron Ted Bundy biopic, Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile. So this movie, okay, I think everyone was super freaked out and worried that this movie would glamorize Ted Bundy, and I certainly don't think it does that. So I think if you care about my film critique, I will put your soul at ease and say that it doesn't glamorize him, but it's certainly like extremely problematic. I'll say that as a first point. So one of the guys who helped catch the Golden State Killer, Billy Jensen, who helped finish the book that I think we both read that book, I'll Be Gone in the Dark.
Yeah.
So he made a really good point on Twitter, and he was like, they don't talk about the victims in this film. Like, not even, I think they mention their names in passing in like found footage, but like used newsreel footage, and that's it. Like, there is no centering of victims, not even centering. They're just not a part of this movie at all. And, like, I understand not every film needs to have, you know, horrific scenes of violence, but they just aren't part of it. Like, it's as if you didn't know who Ted Bundy was, you could watch the first 95% of this film and think it was a movie about a wrongfully accused person.
And yes, that's what I thought. Like, I don't know a ton about Ted Bundy. I mean, I know that he confessed eventually, but, like, that's what I thought.
And that is, I think, is really a problem. And I'm not, you know, I love problematic art. This is the one place where I am really pro free speech. Otherwise, I'm pretty much against it. but in this case, I was really shocked and hurt, actually. I found it hurtful to watch this movie, because it just was so benign in that sort of way. And then the way women were actually depicted in this film, I thought was really inappropriate. his wife, up until the last 5% of the film, was depicted as like a lovesick puppy who would allow him to get away with anything, even though that's not, I do not think that reflected reality. Lily Collins was amazing. I think she's a wonderful actress, but I just thought that was totally, totally inappropriate. And the way that his, so for sure he did have groupies, like they, for some fucking reason, all serial killers do. But the, comparing what they did in the film to the footage they weirdly show at the end of the movie, it was just like, look at these dumb girls. That was the way women were depicted in the film, which is how Ted Bundy thought about women. So, I don't know, it really freaked me out in a lot of ways. But on the other flip side, Zac Efron was amazing. I thought he was incredible. I think he got Ted Bundy spot on, which is fucking creepy as fuck. So, I don't know. It's just not like a good ass movie. it's just a movie. So
yeah. I watched it yesterday after.
Oh, good.
When I knew that you were going to talk about it. So first of all, I have to say, on the problematic aspect, the fact that this guy, Joe Berlinger, made the Ted Bundy tapes and then made this movie as well.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Is fucking weird.
Huh.
So he talked, I haven't watched the Ted Bundy tapes, but I assume it's Ted Bundy's talking for most of it, and then made a second thing where it again just centers him.
Yeah.
I find that very strange. Like, that's a weird thing to do. But in terms of the actual movie, it was tonally so strange, and I had no idea what it was going for. Mm-hmm. Like, at the beginning, I thought, like, it's kind of making him out to be a rock star, but then it's like a caper film, and then it's a courtroom drama, and exactly what you said before, I didn't know, the film didn't ever say or even hint to like, oh yeah, he definitely did this. So it was very strange in that way. It was odd. It wasn't very well put together. It, I mean, eventually I felt like he was kind of a loser. Like, he obviously had a very high opinion of himself, but he wasn't actually as nearly as clever as he thought he was. But it was just, I don't know, it was very strange. I didn't know what the point of it was.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know who that movie was for, like, at all. Beyond that, like, the movie had no tension. Like, there was, if you didn't know who Ted Bundy was, there was no tension about, like, his false arrest or whatever. And if you did know, you only know the tension came in the last 5 minutes of the movie. And that's it. I found it totally and utterly bizarre. And I don't know, maybe this is the problem with, like, I hadn't really thought about this thoroughly, but maybe this is the problem with Netflix movies, is because they don't have to do well, they don't go through, I mean, as far as I understand, they don't go through audience testing, or they don't have those previews or like critiques like other movies do beforehand. So I don't know. I'm not clear if maybe it's a production issue or whatever, or maybe it's good that people can sort of do what they want without having to be tested. But I don't know. It just wasn't for me, that's for sure. And I know, you know, we're both true crime fans, so I want to defend us a little bit, at least. I know it's like very woke right now to, nothing wrong with, you know, wokeness, but that true crime has a bad rap these days of being, you know, like, what's the word when something's gross and you look at it?
Exploitative?
Yeah, exploitative or disrespectful or whatever. And I agree, a lot of it is. And in fact, that's what I think the problem is with this film, is there's sort of a right way and a wrong way to do these things. And I think just this was the wrong way for sure.
Yeah, I was concerned at the beginning it would really focus on the crimes, but then to not focus on the crimes at all was just as bad.
It's
almost.
So because that's, I don't know, if you've ever read Anne Rule's The Stranger Beside Me, which is written by a woman who worked with Ted Bundy at a emergency crisis call center, which, by the way, fuck that guy.
Mm-hmm.
So her book is about her experience with Ted Bundy, but 90% of the book is about the victims. Like, she talks about the victims' lives. It's way more, it's just way more well-rounded and focuses on what's important, which is that people died. So, yeah, it was totally, totally mental.
And I think it also skips what is the most interesting part to me is these serial killers who are terrible, but also keep up normal-ish relationships and, like, who can fool people in that way. And, like, those are the cases I find really interesting. Like, how do you manage to do both? But it just, this movie doesn't care about that at all.
Yeah. No, there's no explanation for why his life was so good. Like, his life seemed pretty good. And and if we had understood in the movie at all that he was also murdering lots of people at the time, at least that would have made for an interesting film, but they just didn't do that.
So I started playing a game recently called Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice, and it's about this warrior, I think it's Norse mythology, and her boyfriend dies, and I think she's carrying his head around.
Nice.
But she basically has to go through hell in order to find him, bring him back, something. And it's interesting, and what it got a lot of press about was all of the focus on mental health. Like, Senua has psychosis, and one of the big things from the game was that they talked to actual psychologists and psychiatrists, and they wanted to portray mental illness in a sort of respectful kind of way.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I'm going to get to that in a second, but the game, first of all, it tells you to use headphones because Senua has voices in her head all the time. So it's almost, when I was playing it with headphones and the voices just are always whispering to you, so it's almost like negative affirmation ASMR because they're like, what is she doing? Why is she doing that? She's never going to make it. Wow. And it's like this weird thing where it's kind of relaxing, even though they're not exactly encouraging you or anything. But the game so far is really good. It looks fantastic, like the animations and the facial expressions and things. And then as far as the mental health aspect, and I'm sort of going to crib from Dia Lucina on this, although probably not nearly as eloquently, it's kind of strange that they made such a big deal out of the mental health aspect when the game is about sort of going through this barren hellscape alone. That's what the game is. Whereas mental illness is hard because you have to live in society.
Huh.
I mean, I'm glad that they did it, like that they did their research and things. But at the same time, it's like, this is very fictional character who's basically going through hell. How much harder can mental illness really make it?
Right. What kind of game is it?
It's just like an action.
Maybe that's, I mean, the only reason I can think that they would do that is that being alone is like metaphorically useful a little bit in that, like, when you suffer from mental illness, you feel alone a lot. But, yeah, the hard part is being in society. We live in a society, and it's the worst. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's, I don't know, like, it's still, like, gameplay-wise and everything, I'm really enjoying it. But in terms of, you know, just the story, I don't know, maybe there's some big twist at the end or something that kind of brings everything together. But for now, I'm just like, okay, she has voices in her head, and she sees things, which are the things that you have to combat. And it just seems like, I don't know, like, it's a fairly basic kind of video gamey story. So it's just from everything that I heard about the game before playing it and all this like focus on mental illness, and now that I'm actually playing it, it was like, oh, is that it? Like, I don't know.
Not to derail this, but my favorite media product that is about sort of Norse stuff, if you want to read a good comic, there's a good comic called Northlanders that's sort of set, but they're Viking stories that I really like.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I don't read any comics.
Oh my gosh. You should read comics. They're great. I mean, they're not for everybody, but I really like them.
I don't know. Something about the medium and the words and the pictures just do it for me.
Actually, I totally feel you because you know that I hate having stories in video games. So
yeah.
I don't like my stories delivered to me in a video game. I like them delivered to me either reading and looking or watching a movie. That's it. Mm. All right, we'll trade. You can have story video games, and I'll keep my comic books.
Sounds good.
That's really funny.
Have you been playing anything?
So I'm not like you all. I don't try new video games ever. I stick with what I know, which is mostly Blizzard properties, which is unfortunate right now because most of their games are not super great at the moment. So I guess the only new thing really that I played was the most recent League of Path of Exile, which I don't know if you like ARPGs, but they are my favorite genre of game, for sure. I love them, Diablo and Path of Exile being my two favorites. Path of Exile, I know I've talked about it literally on your podcast before, but I love this game. It's free to play. I mean, quote unquote free to play. That has microtransactions where you can spend huge amounts of money on, you know, making your character look cute. But it is extraordinarily complicated. The game, you could read an entire book about how to play the game, and it still wouldn't make any sense. which I know sounds terrible, and I think if you don't have friends who already play it, it's probably pretty hard. I usually play, you know, sitting on Discord with friends, and so I always have someone to explain something to me because they understand it way better than I do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very deep, deep game. Like, every choice you make actually has an effect. It's really hard to, you know, the last levels before level 100 are super hard. Not everyone levels to max. It's really hard to accomplish things. It takes a lot of time, but I really, really like it. So it was disappointing to me, and I think this is sort of a popular sentiment among the Path of Exile community, was their last... So, sorry, I should rephrase this. Like Diablo 3, they release sort of special leagues where you create a new character, you start fresh, there's no economy, everyone starts at level 1, and then you play, and there's usually a new gimmick. So this company has had extraordinary success in making leagues that were extremely popular, almost universally loved. So the gimmick is always like super interesting. It makes the gameplay fascinating. It really adds something. There have been a couple times when they've missed the mark. And this past season was just such a dud, and I was so sad.
Aww.
Yeah, I was really quite disappointed. The thing with this games company, and I really try not to have opinions about games companies because I feel like I don't know diddly squat about making video games, and so I really try to reserve myself. But this company has been Grinding Gear Games, I think, is the who makes it, and they have been really vocal in acknowledging that they made a mistake that they know it was a flop. So I'm looking forward. The new league is being announced in the next couple weeks, I think. I'm really, really excited for the next league. And it's funny because the ARPGs I play, both of them are seasonal. So it's like 3 months on, 2 weeks off kind of thing. And with Diablo 3, I sort of get sick of it after a couple weeks. I you know, beat the challenges, whatever, and then that's it. And so the time in between seasons or leagues, I'm like, I have a dearth of ARPGs and I'm sad. So I'm really looking forward to the new, not only is there a new Path of Exile League being announced, there's a new Diablo 3 season starting in a week, so I'm going to be flush with ARPGs.
That's good. And that's interesting that the company sort of admitted they made a mistake.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, it's fascinating, for sure.
Because I find so much of the time, like even take Blizzard in comparison, it's sort of a defensiveness there. And it's like, oh, well, some people wanted this you didn't understand it. Or so, I mean, there's definitely a balance there between listening to feedback
Yeah.
and doing what you think you should do, but.
And it was interesting because, I think they gave a few explanations, but one of the ones I heard the most recently was they said, bad leagues happen when too much stuff is going on. So when we're overloaded and working on too many things at once, it results in worse games. So, you know, just give us a little break a little bit and we'll, make you a better video game. So I find that, attitude interesting and fascinating. So that's, cool. That's it. That's all I ever play. That and, you know, the usual. So.
Have you been watching Game of Thrones?
I have. This is why I got cable. Like literally. that was the only reason, is to have HBO. What do you think? Oh, we should have a spoiler warning right now.
Yeah. Yep. We'll put a spoiler warning in for, we're going to talk about the latest season. I thought it's been pretty bad.
Oh, the pits, just the absolute pits. Yeah.
Just the worst. Like, I think episode 2 was really good.
Yep.
Episode 3, the Battle of Winterfell, I hated it. First of all, it was so dark.
Yep.
So dark. And that also brings up creators being defensive. Yep. And being like, no, it was supposed to be like that. And it's like, okay, there's like something to say for darkness and not knowing what's going on in the battle, but you can't just do the whole episode like that. You can portray that and still allow people to see what's going on. And then the last episode started out all right, and then it just went right off the deep end. Mm-hmm. I was reading a Twitter thread yesterday by someone about the sort of different writing styles of George R.R. Martin versus the showrunners now, and how George R.R. Martin was very much character focused, mm-hmm. and he would take the story wherever it felt natural for the characters to go, whereas now it's definitely plot focused and like, here are the plot points we want to see and the cool scenes that we want to show, and here's how we have to get there.
Yeah, it's the way that they're doing it now. Do you remember that Dave Chappelle bit where he's in court and he's telling the judge, wrap it up, judge, you know, wrap that shit up. And that's all I see with the show now, is like, fucking get to the end. We just need to give them something to happen so that, you know, there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. Please, like, let's just wrap it up. yeah, it's and it's such a letdown after these seasons of like slow methodical episodes where you know, 90% of the show was like two people talking in a cold room. And, like, I like that. I don't care for action. If I wanted action, I'd go to the movies. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. And even this season, like, when it is more character-focused and characters talking, it's all right. It's when, like, the big events happen that it gets weird. So,
and I think that's the problem with this pacing of this 6-episode season, right? So we're used to, you know, maybe 2 big events over the course of a long season. So like I'm trying to remember the season with the Red Wedding was like, mm-hmm. there's like a mid-season big event and then like the final episode, total fucking shite show. But now mm-hmm. we're getting like, that happens every other episode and I'm stressed about it. It's too much for me. So yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Okay. So we should have a poll. Who do you think's going to end up on the Iron Throne?
I mean, I hope no one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I hope the throne is not a thing at the end of it. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of thinking it's going to just be Jon, because that's the most boring answer.
If that's you know, it's so funny. In all the things I contemplated, I actually hadn't even considered that, and now I'm mad.
Like,
no. I hope.
I think Dany's dead. Dany is going to get killed by someone on her own side. Because she's going to burn everyone.
Okay, wow, good. Yeah, good.
Like, what else could they be building up to with that last episode?
Yeah. I know, it's, I'm like you, I do hope that no one ends up on the throne. I think, so, to me what this show is about is hubris. And the books actually, similarly. That no matter how good you are, if you think yourself as good for even half a fucking second, you're fucked. Like, that's it. So I My hope is that not only does no one end up on the throne, I hope literally everyone dies. Like, the the whole world. I want the world to end. I mean, I just want the world to end. I think that's the only appropriate ending for this show. But if it's just Jon, what a snooze fest.
Yeah.
Oh, it would suck.
Yeah, I don't know. I was thinking, like, it might be, like, none of this matters, everything's gonna end, but then when they killed the Night King at the halfway mark,
yeah.
I was like, well, I guess that's not
gonna
happen. I mean, in a way, I thought the Night King was going to be, like, the ultimate big battle, and that King's Landing would happen first, which, I don't know, based on the story so far, would make sense, although I am kind of glad, because, like, purposeless, as far as we know, zombies are not nearly as interesting as human
drama. I agree.
Drama.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm much more excited to see the Cersei stuff. And this is, so, okay, maybe this is a minor quibble, but I'm really annoyed that we now, like, so this whole time we were tricked into liking Dany, who I think has always wanted to be a dictator, versus Cersei, who, I'm not sure she always wanted to be a dictator, but the show was made for us to dislike her. And I mean, at least that's my impression. And I don't like that. I want to like Cersei and I want to hate Dany. And I hate that I'm supposed to hate them both now.
Yeah.
I don't know. And Euron Greyjoy is a Mary Sue. I'm sorry. Get him out of here. Just the worst.
Yeah. He's so funny. He's just like Euro trash pirate. And
that's hilarious.
I don't know. He's nothing like he is in the book, which doesn't really matter at this point, but he's just...
What's he like in the book?
He's like an evil warlock.
Oh.
Like, he does blood rituals and...
Sick.
Mm-hmm. He drinks that blue stuff. Remember that stuff from the House of the Undying?
Oh, yeah.
The blue lips.
Yeah.
Like, he drank that, and, he's like... not supposed to be like a charming rogue. He's like very, very evil.
Damn, that would have been so cool.
Mm-hmm.
But see, this is where I think, you know, the writers are probably like, they're too stupid, you know, the viewers of the show are too stupid to understand that, so let's, you know, dumb it down a little bit. What can they understand? They like Bronn. Let's make another Bronn, but evil.
Yeah.
Yeah. Too bad. Too bad.
It is too bad. I mean, I'll be there to see what happens in the next episodes, but I don't feel like I'm going to be happy. I mean, I'm already unhappy with what they've done with everyone, but...
Do you think George R. R. Martin is going to finish the books?
I don't know. I think he's got two more left.
Holy guacamole.
Like, I feel like the chances of him finishing both of them are pretty slim. But I would like to know... sort of where he would have saw the story going.
Yeah, so instead of writing the books, we should just sit him down and be like, so just tell us what you were thinking.
Yeah.
That'd be good. I like that. I like that idea. Well, I guess it is Saturday the 11th, so we'll see tomorrow where this is going. How many episodes are left? Three?
Two.
Two? Oh my God. That's not enough.
No.
No.
A lot has to happen in two episodes.
Yeah. Man, and I just, it's so funny, because there has been such a long period of time between episodes, seasons, I can't believe I forgot that Littlefinger died, like, so long ago. I was very sad when I turned on this season, you know, I was like, shit, my guy's not even in this! Like, I hate it, I don't want this. So,
yeah.
I'm sad about that.
I loved Littlefinger.
Me too. I love that actor so much.
Me too, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for me. Was there anything else you want to talk about?
So the main media that I consume is podcasts. Like, more than anything, I listen to hours of podcasts.
Yeah, me too.
So I was just going to mention my current favorite, which is the QAnon Anonymous podcast. Don't be alarmed, they're not QAnon believers. QAnon is like the popular conspiracy theory among right-wing Americans these days. It's slowly trickling into Canada. Anyways, it's super fascinating. It's totally fucked. Highly recommend reading about it, except not actually engaging with any of those people, obviously. But the QAnon Anonymous podcast is a podcast where they just make fun of it. And, like, talk about, you know, the reasons why people might believe in conspiracy theories and things like that. And one of the episodes I was thinking about, I want to mention this because they also have a great episode about why YouTube is so good for conspiracy theorists.
Oh.
So I thought I would make a good segue. Look at me doing radio things.
Look at you, yeah. So that does bring us to our main topic, which is YouTube.
Yeah.
Watching it, creating for it, loving it, hating it.
Yeah.
So it was actually your idea to have this topic. So what made you want to talk about YouTube?
So what made me want to talk about YouTube is I'm a grown-ass lady. You know, I'm 37 years old. And I probably watch at minimum an hour to an hour and a half of YouTube every day. Well, but let's say between half an hour and a half of YouTube every day. Mm-hmm. And I'm fucking alarmed at that. it alarms me. I'm hooked on it. I read subreddits about it. I follow YouTubers on Twitter and Instagram. I listen to their music that they release. I want to understand a phenomenon where the products are not always great, and yet I can't look away. So that's where I'm at.
Interesting. Do you think it's anything like the reality TV phenomenon?
So absolutely. I mean, it must be, because I also love Jersey Shore.
Oh.
And all that shit. Like, maybe I just have an obsession with watching people at their worst. Although YouTube is so highly produced, it's not really people at their worst, but I don't know. I don't know what it is. I'm trying to figure it out. So that's why I wanted to talk about YouTube today. I'm also deeply fascinated by YouTube as a business and platform hegemony in general. So, okay. Yeah. What do you want to talk about YouTube?
I also watch a ton of YouTube. I mean, they kind of fall into, I think, four categories. There's ASMR, which I watch basically every night. There's video games. There's film, not necessarily film, but like video essays, which are often on film, but sometimes on, I don't know, sort of leftist topics. And then there is makeup, mm-hmm, YouTube. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's interesting just sort of like the ties between them and how people interact with YouTubers. And a lot of YouTubers have been making videos about parasocial relationships, which is like another really interesting topic. And then as a sort of creator point of view, I'm interested in sort of what creators are doing, like especially people who are doing this as their job as opposed to just a hobby, and sort of what they get from it, how they make money from it, and just the sort of impact on you of being subject to constant,
yes,
feedback.
Yeah. Awesome. Great. I'm really excited to talk about YouTube. I'm nervous to ask you some things because I don't want to be like, YouTube creators are dicks and I hate all of you and you're just here for my entertainment. But I do have some problems with some YouTuber behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing I thought of was when we talked about what we're going to talk about on this episode was, it's funny because you had this sort of an opposite issue. I really dislike when YouTubers complain about the YouTube algorithm. So it's funny because the only time I've ever heard you mention it was when the algorithm worked in your favor, and it must have highlighted your vampire. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was a video that of yours that became very popular due to, I guess, does that mean it autoplays after someone's popular video? Is that usually what the algorithm does? Or it puts it on trending pages and things like that?
Yeah, it could put it on trending pages or like when you sign in and you get your homepage,
right,
it'll like recommend you videos.
Gotcha. So the opposite problem is really something that really turns me off is when YouTubers, some of whom have 6 million plus subscribers, say, guys, everyone like this video. The algorithm didn't like it today, so it's not gonna do as well. Or, and this happened yesterday, a woman that I watch who does not only does makeup reviews, but does a 1 minute video every day about new makeup releases. She said, I'm stopping doing this particular type of video that I really enjoy doing because it doesn't work well with the algorithm. And my ass just about dropped out of my body. I was like, you like doing this, and because the algorithm thinks it's bad, you're not going to do it anymore? What the fuck? I was so angry. I was like, why can't people just do what they like and not worry about the algorithm? Oh my gosh. So that's one thing that's been stressing me out about YouTube.
Yeah, that's a weird topic because, first of all, no one really knows how it works. I mean, people give advice like, oh, longer videos, the more interaction you get. But it, I don't know, it seems totally random to me. And as someone who for 3 years, like, never benefited from it at all, I don't really think about it all that much, like, until very recently. So, yeah, I mean, it's strange that you would just stop doing something or change your content from something that you like doing because of that. But if it's your job and if it's your income and suddenly it drops, I mean, I can understand wanting to change that. I think it sort of goes with just doing this as a job. Like, one of the, actually, someone you recommended to me, Samantha Ravindal, and she talks a lot about how, like, this is my job, and some people, like,
people feel hate like her she's for that. Yeah.
Being entitled or not appreciative of it. And, like, even though, yeah, it's a cool job, it is still a job, and it is still something you have to work at. And if she was, you know, finding one type of content just wasn't making any money, like, you know, if you were doing a job that wasn't, like, salaried, if you were, I don't know, a freelancer or whatever, you would do the work that gave you money,
right,
instead of the work that was less rewarding, even though you might like it better. So,
yeah, and I think that divide is something that is very interesting, is people who do it as a profession or full-time job, and people who maybe, I mean, there's a spectrum, let's say. People who want to do it as a hobby, but eventually want to make money. People who want to make money right off the bat, which is something I see all the time with beauty YouTubers when they say, people are asking me how to start a YouTube channel. Well, you know, to me, if you're looking for advice on starting it, it means you're not actually that interested in making content. You just want to have a popular YouTube channel, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, yeah. And this is another problem where I'm probably guilty of judging people's authenticity, maybe in ways that are not helpful. So I'm annoyed that this person wants to do something or is stopping doing something that they enjoy because people aren't seeing the videos. It's like an indie band selling out, you know, like, I don't know. We're going to change our sound just to get a big record deal, but.
Yeah, I don't know. It's so complicated because I also feel like some people, if you, you know, complain about a video not doing very well, and a lot of people be like, oh, it's just for fun, do what you love. But at the same time, like, while I do make whatever content I feel like making, at the same time, I'm not putting all this effort in so that no one watches
right,
it.
Right.
I feel like if it's below a certain threshold, I'm like, why did I make this? Like, sure, I might have liked talking about this, but, you know, I'm not making this for myself.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, partially for myself, but a lot of it is so everyone knows what I think because I'm super important.
You are super important. And it's funny because, you know, I'm happy to watch your videos, even though I mostly don't know what you're talking about because I don't know anything about video games. And you, I think for a lot of reasons, do come off as extremely authentic, especially when people question your authenticity, I think, you know, which is, I think, something we're going to be talking about. But I deeply want it. I'm glad people defend you over it because it makes me mad when actually people who are authentically doing YouTube out of enjoyment or interest in subject matter get called out. Versus people who are, I mean, there are some people who it's very obvious that it's really just for the money. So, yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And it's so strange because, like, you want people to be authentic, but at the same time, like, I do my actual job just for the money.
Right.
Like, it's not because I love IT. Like, it's...
Yeah. And I suppose that's true. I mean, if one day you decide, okay, I'm going to quit my job and do YouTube full-time, I guess that's where, you know, things do have to change, because even if you want to stay authentic, you got to eat, like, mm-hmm. you know? So, I don't know. It's a really fine line to balance, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But then again, as a shitty YouTube viewer, my initial response to people complaining about the algorithm is, if people don't watch your videos, make better content. So, maybe have I been the asshole this whole time? Like, that's... I just feel bad.
Is complaining about the algorithm like complaining about your ELO?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, God, I'm in bronze with these stupid idiots or whatever. I should be a master. Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. The algorithm's a weird one, because for any videos that get big, like, it is all about YouTube surfacing it and putting it in front of people. Like, your own subscribers won't watch it. Like, maybe 20, maybe 40, if you're lucky, percent of your subscribers will watch any given video.
Yeah.
Even if, like, someone links to a video from, like, a website or something, like, that's not that huge. It can be, but what it is, like, it's YouTube putting this video in front of someone's face when they open their app that, like,
yeah.
can make a video blow up.
So that is really fascinating to me, because I do notice that a lot. I always check, like, if I'm watching someone's video, whether they're, like, what percentage of their subscribers are watching their videos. And that's, it's so funny to me that people take subscribers as, like, a mark of anything. And I'm very proud of people, my friends, who gain a certain amount of subscribers, but it doesn't translate into views at all. I mean, it's so weird.
Yeah, and as you grow in subscribers, it generally
lowers the ratio. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I always thought, like, oh, if this video gets to a number that equals 20% of my subscribers, that's, like, successful for me, which is a pretty small amount when you think of it. So
wild.
Yep.
The other thing I want to ask you about was, so something I've talked about with other people who do gaming content I didn't really realize that things like, okay, so a lot of beauty YouTubers don't necessarily make their money off views or AdSense. They make their money from sponsorships, paid partnerships that they get with companies to show their products. And I didn't really realize that that's not common in every part of YouTube. Is that a thing in gaming YouTube?
It is. There are sponsorships. Like, I'm a small channel. I've had, like, my channel manager come to me, like, a couple times, like, oh, are you interested in doing a sponsored video for whatever? And I've always said no. But, like, it is a thing where you can get sponsored to, like, play a bit of a game or just even mention a game on your channel. But it's not as big. I mean, some things, no, this isn't YouTube, this is Twitch. But, like, when Apex Legends came out, I think they gave Ninja $1 million to play it for the week or something, so, rather than playing Fortnite.
So I think this is a very strange difference between YouTube in different sort of hobby sectors. That happens every day, all the time, to beauty YouTubers. They're frequently given $1 million to do something. Like, all the, like 10 times a day. Like, it happens all the time. It shocks me how much money flows through the beauty YouTube space. And I just, when I had mentioned it to someone who's a Twitch streamer, that was only, I guess, like a year ago, they were, like, shocked to hear how much money beauty YouTubers are offered for sponsorships and things.
I think that's why it was so shocking and, like, such a big deal when Ninja got that money from Apex, because I don't think, I mean, it happens, I'm sure, sometimes, but it's not, like, an everyday occurrence. Like, it was news.
Right. Yeah, it is so not news in the beauty YouTube space. And as someone who, you know, has a fucking problem with capitalism. It's, which is funny as a fucking YouTube addict, but it's really problematic in places where it's so intertwined, the advertising and the human, that you can't, you never know unless they say they're sponsored, and they're supposed to say they're sponsored, but a lot of them really don't. Or the the contract is so, like, you know, worded in such a way that it's like, we're gonna take you on this brand trip, and if you Instagram it, it's up to you, but, like, if you Instagram it, obviously our logo is gonna be everywhere, and we're taking you to Bora Bora or whatever. So, yeah, I don't know. My major issue right now is, and the reason why I'm mad at myself for watching so much YouTube is that it's basically just watching hours of advertising at this point. And
it's true.
Yeah. And that is, I'm not buying makeup right now because I really had a problem with it. I was spending a lot of money. I haven't bought any makeup other than, like, skincare that I need for 5 months.
Oh, wow. That's good.
I'm so proud of myself. And it really has made it harder and harder to watch beauty YouTube. Because it really is just like, buy this new product, buy this new product, buy this new product. Even they have favorites. They no longer talk about them because they're just being paid to push new products. It's starting to slowly turn me off. I've unsubscribed from a lot of things that I was watching before. But it's just been painful to watch.
I haven't. So, because some of the sponsored content I see on beauty YouTubers, it's not that bad. Like, they say at the beginning, like, this is sponsored by whatever, and then they'll use some of their products with some other products, and it's like, okay. But it is basically one big ad, whether it's sponsored or not. It's like, here's some makeup, and here's why you need it, because I think it's great. Even if they're not saying, you know, go out and buy this, it's still just like advertising, which is why I feel kind of strange even. Right. Like, I like talking about older games because I don't feel like a marketing shill for anyone. Because good. no one's gonna make money if well, I mean, like, a store might make money if someone goes out and buys a game that I talk about. And it's a strange thing. Again, it's like so conflicting because on the one hand, I'm like, if you want me to advertise for you, you have to give me money. But on the other hand, it's like, I don't want to advertise for you for money.
Right. Yeah.
So, that's why I rarely talk about new games. Like, I get a lot of emails from, you know, like, indie developers and things saying, like, would you want to cover this game? And it's like, no, I just want to talk about what I like to talk about. And also, again, because it's not my job, I don't want to have to come up with a script or a video on something that I don't really have that much to say about. Like, I only want to make videos when I have something interesting to say.
Crazy. What was I going to say? I think a lot of people in other YouTube areas struggle with that, where they want to be honest about things, but they need to make money. But then you see people who are like literal millionaires, and I'm like, you're still doing sponsorships. You're still, you know, shilling for frickin' sugar bear hair or whatever. Can we not, like, you're a literal millionaire. Is that not enough for you? Like, can we take a break a little bit? It's just really shocking to me, the amount of money involved. And just the, I know a lot of people have written about prosumers, you know, people who produce the content for the platform, who are also the consumers of that content and whatever. And, you know, people writing about the trouble of our, like, platform future. And I don't know enough about it, admittedly, and I should read more about platform capitalism. But I'm worried about the intertwining of advertising and, like, actual human beings, for sure.
I don't know how to deal with that. Like, it's so much less obvious on YouTube, I find. Like, whenever I scroll through Instagram, it seems like everything is an ad for something. But
yeah, because you don't have to open. So now Instagram has that little mark at the top that says in partnership with or sponsored by. Whereas with YouTube, for me, I have to open the description box and scroll to the very bottom. And it's usually something like FTC disclaimer, some of the stuff in this post was sponsored. And they don't even describe what was sponsored. They don't describe the contract. It's just like, some of these links are affiliate links. Some of this is sponsored. And it's so disingenuous and terrible. And I just feel scummy about it more often than not.
Yeah, I feel strange because when it comes to beauty YouTubers, I tend to subscribe more to smaller creators. Actually, that's sort of the case for most things that I do. But like seeing things like Nicole Concilio, and like she did a tour of her backyard, and I was like, oh wow, you have a lot of money.
Yeah, she's super rich.
Yeah, and she's like, her channel isn't that big. Mm-hmm. It's like a million or so. And then watching the Tatty video yesterday and talking about how much James Charles make, and I was like, are you kidding me? I don't know.
James Charles is richer than like the GDP of some countries, guaranteed. I mean, mm-hmm. he is insanely wealthy, and inexplicably so to me. I find his content unwatchable. The accumulation of wealth through advertising on YouTube is so gross. I was curious to hear your thoughts on this note you have here, burnout and constant interaction as a creator.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of people talk about burnout and taking breaks in order to, you know, kind of get the creative juices flowing again, which is something that happens. And I think that people who don't have, or who do have YouTube as a career, might not have that option if this is their source of income. But part of the burnout for me comes with just the comments. And like, I try to respond to most of my comments just because, I don't know, I feel like it's good for the channel. I like talking to people sometimes I don't. But it almost gets to an unhealthy point. For me, I'm sure this applies to other people, but like, there's this emotional roller coaster where you put out new content and it's just like interaction, like comments all over the place. Just like, I don't have notifications turned on for anything because that would just drive me bananas. But you check your comments and you've got 30 new comments, and like, they just keep coming. And then there's like this lull in between creating videos where it's like, why isn't anyone paying attention to me? And then it's like back up when there's a new video out, and it's like almost addictively just like checking, saying like, what are people saying? Are they liking it? Are they thumbsing it up, right, or thumbsing it down? Like,
yeah. And that sounds terrible. I would never want to have any part of that. And I'm sorry that is something that you have to do. Like, that sounds horrible. I love people, but the idea of having to keep up with a comment section. Oh God. Whew. I don't know how you do it.
Some people won't read their comments at all, or like, they don't interact. Some people will like read their comments for the first couple hours, because those are the probably the people who get notifications and are like your actual fans, even though the word fans also creeps me out. But yeah, I just like, I'm always checking them, which is not healthy, mm-hmm. but it's strange. It's like this high of like, oh, look at all this attention I'm getting.
Yeah.
So.
And fair enough. Like, I spend a huge amount of time on Twitter because I love that shit. Like, yes, give me those likes. It feels good. And anyone who says it doesn't is a liar, honestly. So I totally get it, but it's still, it must be exhausting, especially as a non-dude. It's probably very difficult and frustrating sometimes to have to, I mean, it's, I guess that's the problem, right, is that you're not just a YouTube creator, you are also a moderator of a comment section, and, you know, answering people's questions, or like, it's not just one thing. And that's, mm-hmm. and that's why I get it. I get the burnout. Although, again, as like someone who watches YouTube, I have in the past been annoyed when someone's like, oh, I'm so burnt out. And I'm like, okay, so stop making 10 videos a week. Like, just fucking don't do it. Like, it's not, you know, no one's going to die if you don't make YouTube videos, except people who do as a profession, where they really do need to do it all the time, or it's, you know, they don't get to eat. So I don't know. I'm, maybe I have, my expectations are too high. and that I get annoyed too easily with people. But I will say, hearing a millionaire complain about burnout annoys me. So I totally get it with smaller channels. But for some people, I'm just like, ugh, really? Oh, so mean.
It's strange because, like, you have to know your goals. Like, I don't ever want to do this as a profession.
Yeah.
Like, the idea of putting my livelihood in YouTube's hands is terrifying. I would never, never want to do that. But at the same time, I want my channel to grow. I would like to make more money from it than I currently do. So it's like a strange sort of balance of like, well, I do want to just talk about what I want to do. And if I don't feel like making a video, then I shouldn't make a video. But at the same time, there's like this fear that you'll just like stagnate if you're not in it.
Can I ask you a question about...
Yes.
You don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but how do you make... Okay, sorry. I'm getting there, I promise. So YouTubers make money from AdSense, right? So you choose how many, if any, ads are going to be in your video if you are allowed to be monetized. And then you make money, but only when people watch the full ad. Is that correct?
I think you make it... If the ad plays, you will make something out of it. And then I think you'd get more if someone actually like clicked on an ad. Yeah, I'm not totally sure how it works. I just see the amount.
So you get money from AdSense. Do you also get money from views? Or that no money from views, just money from AdSense?
It's all from AdSense.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So you can choose sort of where, what kind of ads, like if you just want the skippable ads or if you want 15-second non-skippable ads, you can put them at the front, in the end, sort of all through the middle, which actually is one of the things that pisses me off with beauty YouTubers who has like five ads in a 30-minute video. I think it's about how many ads sort of play.
Okay.
As people watch your videos.
So that's very interesting to me because one of my favorite fucking terribly problematic YouTubers is Tana Mojo, who is a total trash can of a human being. And I like, I don't know, I want to protect her and love her because she's 21 and a total idiot, but it's also like, she's not a very good person. But she is completely demonetized, so no ads play in her videos. But she gets 2 million views per video. So... Mm-hmm. It's very interesting that you can have YouTube as a profession, but not actually make any money from YouTube. She's making money purely from sponsorships and partnerships that come because her videos get so many views. So this is what my concern is, or like my very strange view, or not my strange view, the problematic and strangeness of YouTube and advertising. So, she is not making money off ads, period, end of story, like, at all. Because ads do not run on her videos. So, the only way that some people make money from YouTube is those external sponsorships, which they may or may not disclose. At least with an ad, I can see, you know, that you're advertising, because the ad's running during my video. That stresses me out a lot, too.
It's strange to think of that, like making all your money from there instead of from YouTube. I mean, it seems like probably a much better source of income than just relying on
absolutely
ad revenue.
Yeah,
but
and it's minimum. It's like it's things like, you know, I think people with that many views get something like $60,000 for an Instagram post, which is what that's my salary in a year. So that's, you know, a year of money for 30 seconds of work absolutely blows my mind. Like, big time. Yeah, YouTube, it's a problem.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, though, I am sorry that you experienced burnout. It feels unfair that making a video could be such a burden, you know?
I don't know. It's not so much making. Sometimes I just get, like, I don't want to write anything. Yeah. Like, I'd be fine sitting in front of the camera. I'd be fine recording voiceover or editing. But it's just like I sit down to actually do writing and I'm like, oh, this is writing's hard. I don't like it. So I don't know. Most of the burnout I get is just when I, you know, there's just too much going on. And then again, it's related to the interaction more than the actual production.
Right. The other thing I was thinking about was sort of a parallel, and I guess it's going to, we can call this an analogy. So this whole thing that happened when Diablo 3 came out and like everyone fucking hated Diablo 3 and this, that, and the other thing. And a lot of people were talking about how, you know, it's not that Diablo 3 is bad. It's just that you're a grown up now and like all the things you liked about D1 and D2, those things don't exist anymore because you were, you know, a 12-year-old who like had no problems in your life. Mm-hmm. And now that you're older, you don't like this game because things have changed and you can't get your teenagehood back. Sorry. So, I was thinking a lot about this sort of similar passage of time with YouTube, where, so I would say like the creation of YouTubers as a concept, you know, like it's, I think it's been since like, I don't know, 2010 maybe that this has like been a big deal. So it's been almost 10 years now of like the concept of a famous YouTuber. And I'm starting to wonder if my, you know, changing content taste, maybe we're growing up, you know, is going to change the way YouTube works. And I think it already has in the way that, you know, the most popular things on YouTube are things for 12-year-olds. You know, it's not about us. And that's fine. It just freaks me out a little bit that YouTube, even though it's supposed, I mean, I think it started out as this, like, democratic platform where anyone can have a channel and you can be famous on YouTube and whatever, but the stuff, the only things that make money or are famous are stuff where you can advertise, or it's stuff for that is literally nonsensical so that babies can watch it. But am I, again, am I the baddie? Am I the one who's old and doesn't understand things anymore? Or is it that, you know, YouTube popularity for adult humans is just not going to be a thing after a while? I don't know the answer.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that either. But yeah, bringing up the fact that a lot of it's aimed at kids, I know, like, some of the most popular channels out there are just kids opening toys.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Which brings the capitalism advertising problem even more sharply into focus, because these, I mean, the kids aren't spending the money, but they're asking their parents to when they see this stuff, so.
Yep. Yeah, and I think it works super well. I mean, it's funny because it doesn't just work well for kids, although I guess kids are watching makeup YouTube primarily, too, is that the fact that companies will spend money on a YouTuber using their product in a video over traditional advertising now is really an indicator that this shit works, right? Like, it worked. Mm-hmm. Without a doubt, it works, and it must, at this point, work better than or works well in conjunction with, traditional advertising. Do you think this bubble's gonna burst, though? That eventually, you know, people are not either not going to watch YouTube like they do now, or they're just, people aren't going to be buying things because influencers, hate that word, influencers say they should?
I don't know. It's hard to say because it feels like so much of it is going that way where it's just advertising and like it's, it seems relatively low effort.
Yeah.
Like the content that I really enjoy are like long form video essays, like ContraPoints and Philosophy Tube and Lindsay Ellis, like, who put so much effort into these videos, and they do okay, but like the popular stuff is, you know, someone just sitting in front of a camera and like talking about the latest drama or advertising for toys or makeup or whatever. So
yeah, I don't know. It hurts my brain. And then I start feeling guilty because I certainly contribute to this problem. So, you know, I don't know. Doesn't make me feel good, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't know what the alternative is, though. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. I guess it was nice in, like, the cable TV days because you knew what was an ad. Although, even in those all have product placement and things in them, too. So,
you know what's funny? It's funny because, so I was thinking about this, and because I was thinking so much about the advertising aspect because you're a creator, I didn't, it's funny that we haven't talked about the, like, Nazi problem.
Oh, yeah.
and I was like, we should probably just put that aside because, you know, there's so many articles about it. It's really clearly an on-purpose thing or, you know, at least they're not, you know, it's not YouTube's concern. They don't particularly care as long as things get engagement and have ads in them and advertisers click on it and this, that, and the other thing, then it doesn't matter.
Right.
But it has to somehow be related to the advertising. Otherwise, those videos wouldn't get prioritized by the algorithm, I don't think. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe this, at first in my mind, I was like, oh, we can set this aside. But then I realized, you know, maybe Nazi advertising is also the problem. So, who knows? I mean, honestly, it feels like an unsolvable problem right now, which is very depressing, and I'm loathe to admit, but I sound like an asshole who's like, oh, should we, there's a great Dave Eggers essay, should we let our favorite band play their biggest hit? And I want, it's not that I want indie YouTube back, I don't think that was ever real, you know, mm-hmm. But I think, you know, something's going to give. Everyone's either going to go broke because, you know, this kind of advertising is not going to work anymore. Or, I don't know. It makes me nervous that so many people rely on YouTube for income.
Yeah, that worries me as well. Because the only thing that will make YouTube care about content is when advertisers start pulling out. But as we've seen, anytime that's happened, they end up punishing the wrong...
That's right.
Channels, yeah. For the most part. Like, they demonetize people who talk about mental health or people who talk about
being LGBTQ. Trans. Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
And, like, well, occasionally they'll go and take off a channel or demonetize a channel from someone who's actually a shithead. I think they just deleted that Sargon of a Cat.
Yeah. Oh, I think thank goodness, you know, because he's now running in the UK as for a.
Yeah.
Like, what a. Whew. Although someone threw fish sardines at him yesterday, which I thought was
good.
Pretty great.
Yeah.
Ugh, what a nightmare. But speaking of gaming men or, mm-hmm. You know, YouTube men, should we get to your last question here?
Yeah, my last question is why all YouTube gaming men eventually get canceled. It seems like there's always some scandal, whether it's PewDiePie being Nazi-ish or men generally sexually, not assaulting, sexually harassing or using their power in order to solicit nudes from fans. It seems like so many of the big dude YouTube gamers are just some skeletons come out of their closet and everyone realizes they're actually shitty.
So my counterpoint to this is, and this is, you know, I understand why people enjoy cancel culture and whatnot, but have any of these dudes who have been quote-unquote canceled ever suffered any real consequences?
No, not that I know of. It's a double-edged sword because you call them out for something and most of the decent people will stop following their content, but then a whole subset of people will rise up around them because they, I don't know, free speech or something.
Yeah. So do you think, I mean, other than unsubscribing from someone's YouTube channel or reporting their videos, is there a way to actually cancel a, for example, sexual assaulter who has a YouTube channel?
No, I don't know how you do it. I mean, every time I've seen it, it turns into a big thing on Twitter and on all the drama channels, but, like, I don't know that they're actually being they're actually getting some kind of punishment out of it. I mean, people have had their, if they're part of a network or part of some other bigger channel, they've been sort of released from those. I'm sure many will get canceled from convention appearances that they have scheduled. But yeah, I mean, there's no way to just completely deplatform.
So, and herein lies my problem with democracy. It's hard to think about. I mean, not that everyone should suffer, you know, terrible consequences all the time for everything, but I think certainly the most egregious examples should suffer. And it's so heartbreaking sometimes to think about how hard that is to do. It's funny to even think about minor consequences. So, like, this thing that's happened in the last 24 hours with James Charles, although it's been happening for a long time. I've always disliked him. He's a racist, has been really just like, he's just been a really big problem. Is that, you know, people are like, oh my God, he lost 1 million subscribers. Okay, he went from 16 million subscribers to 50 million. Like,
exactly.
He's going to be just fine. And the other weird part is YouTube, not everyone who watches YouTube is extremely online. And so, you know, mm-hmm. I'm sure 90% of the people who watch his videos don't even know that this happened, other than his apology video or whatever. You know, so there's just this whole world out there of, I mean, you can cancel someone, but that doesn't, who does that matter to? The people who talk about them on Twitter? It ends up not being, like, as effective or a big deal as we wish it would. And it's just, it makes me sad.
It's also a problem in that the people who call them out and are victims of these people also end up getting a lot of shit aimed their way. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, it seems like hit them in their wallet, like go for those sponsorships and things and try to get those people to stop supporting them. But it's difficult to do that. And yeah, it seems like every big scandal in gaming, YouTube at least, it sort of blows up and then some fans will leave them, some will support them even more and they'll gain new fans. Anyone involved in it will get harassed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
I guess the final answer to literally all of this is we all just need to get off the internet.
Yeah.
We tried. The internet had a good run. That's over.
Yeah.
Oh. Man, I'm trying to imagine life without it. I don't know. And here's the problem is I'm going to keep watching YouTube. I love this garbage. I don't know. I wish I was a stronger woman who could stop watching. But then, you know, I think about not watching Jenna Marbles and her sweet dogs. And I'm like, well, that's sad. I want to watch that channel. But that's the problem with platforms is you can't just pick and choose, right? Is you're supporting an entire platform whether or not you want to.
Yeah. I mean, everything has problems. It's just what you're willing to deal with.
Yeah.
Like all the labor issues and the game companies.
Yes.
And
fully.
The people that run big networks and, like, there's always problems.
Yeah, and it's sort of depressing to think about, like, once we get these old people who run these companies out, we'll have young new blood and maybe things will be different. But that's a capitalism. Capitalism is gonna capitalism, whether or not, no matter who's running YouTube, unfortunately. So I think it's just the way the cookie crumbles these days. And I think all we can do is like encourage people to organize things like strikes and whatnot. I don't know. Does voting socialist for YouTube?
We can hope.
Yeah. Where's Bernie Sanders' platform to fix YouTube? That's what I want. Bernie, help us. Oh. Yeah. I hate that sometimes we talk about these like juicy topics and it's like, well, guess I'll go die. Like,
yep. And on a down note.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, with global warming, we're all going to be dead soon anyway, so.
Sweet. Yeah.
And on that note. Okay, well, let's try to end a little bit more positively. Is there any channel you would like to recommend to people?
Let me look at my YouTube subscriptions real quick. No.
No.
No. I will recommend your channel. Everyone should watch Pam's YouTube channel, Cannot Be Tamed. It's authentic. My real recommendation is don't watch beauty YouTube. It's a real cesspool. So watch Pam's channel. That's my final word on it. That's a good one. Even I like it, and I hate video games.
Well, thank you. So I want to recommend ContraPoints. Do you watch ContraPoints?
I do not. I actually don't watch a lot of politics on YouTube just because that's what I do with podcasts. Almost all the podcasts I listen to are political.
Right.
So I don't know why I have not. Should I? I will take your recommendation and watch ContraPoints.
You should watch them. They're very good. A lot of them are very philosophical, but they're also political. She sort of points out issues with the left, with the right, what's wrong. She's got a series called What's Wrong with Capitalism, which
heck yeah,
is nice. She's done a video on Jordan Peterson. She did a really good one on incels and how that all came to be.
Yeah, I did watch that one.
Okay.
Yeah. I think after she was on Chapo, I watched that episode.
So that's my recommendation. Sarah, where can people find you on the internet if it doesn't get deleted?
You can find me on Twitter at OHHHSOURRY. Oh, sorry. Come give me those sweet, sweet likes. Maybe I get a sponsorship.
All right. And you can find me on Twitter at Josiah_ or my channel Cannot Be Tamed. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me to talk about YouTube and all its problems.
Thanks for having me. It's always such a pleasure to talk to you, and I miss you every day.
I miss you too.
Oh.
I want you to come home.
I'm trying.
All right. If you have any feedback or questions, you can reach out at mediamavenscast@gmail.com or contact us on Twitter at _mediamavens. There's also a forum for discussion of any of our episodes at cartridgeclub.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.